Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun. It's all right. What's up, everybody? You're watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast here in sunny Los Angeles. We've never done that, have we?
Here like a radio in sunny thing. Los Angeles, California.
I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Yeah, wow, what a great morning. We got some traffic out there on the 5 right now, and things are looking rough. But yeah, we got some tunes for you. We'll be singing all of them.
We've got 32 minutes of nonstop music.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Before your first commercial break. Music.
Here at 98.2 CZFM.
The breaking news today. Josh Lee Kwai, known for his appearances on Game Nights, has broken Boros through. Audiences had no idea if it could be done. Turns out it can be done. And Josh showed that in magnificent order.
I don't know about breaking, but yes, you all, on the latest Game Nights, we put out the call. We let everybody vote on which color pair, which guild each player would be playing. And y'all tried and troll me. And
I may have helped.
Yeah, Jimmy may have encouraged
pushed
everyone.
The dial
you know
in a certain
that I
direction.
Was like, I think Simic
was
winning
definitely number
when
one
you did
for
that.
You.
And then it was just like, Boros. I was like, yeah, thanks
Who
a lot.
Wants to see Josh Lee Kwai play Boros? The crowd goes actually very high. There were a lot of people that wanted that. But yeah, it went viral-esque in a way. And Josh had to play Boros on our last Game Nights episode. I played Rakdos, Rachel played Orzhov, and Kenji played, not Simic, is it?
Yeah, so we're going to be breaking down my Fire Song and Sun Speaker deck from that episode. A lot of people were surprised with how well it played. I was a little surprised as well. No, I'd played it a few times, so I knew the deck was strong.
Yeah.
So a lot of people expressed interest in hearing us break it down. So we're going to do that. Before we get into it, we do need to talk about our sponsors. You know, if you want to build a really cool Boros deck, either this one or we just previewed a really sweet Boros legendary creature from War
Did
of the Spark.
Ever. Let's just deck tech that.
Yeah, I actually think that deck's probably... I think it's better than this deck.
Oh, I think it's actually much better than this deck.
Yes. Yeah, so,
and we'll talk about that.
So you can go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone right now and pick up Boros cards basically for either one of these decks, or you can just pre-order your booster boxes, your bundles, all that type of stuff. And you're going to buy Magic cards anyway. You really are helping out this show, Game Nights, all of our content when you use the affiliate link when you do buy the cards.
And while you're there, Ultra Pro, represent the Legion. The Legion did approve. That's the top comment on the last video.
Yeah.
So the Legion approves, and you have a way to do that with Ultra Pro product, with their playmats, deck boxes, sleeves, across every way you want to. You can find a way to theme your playmats to be whatever guild you want. In this case, we are talking about Boros. It's a lot of Boros on the Command Zone this week.
Yeah, that is actually. The final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You know, we have a really good community. You can chat with Jimmy and I daily. We're on our Discord server quite a bit these days. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other people on there. If you're deck building, brewing, whatever, there's a ton of experienced EDH players.
Yeah, way more than me, to be honest.
That are giving out advice. I'm all the time hearing about cards where I'm like, I have never even heard of that card, but it seems awesome.
Yeah.
So our Discord is available to patrons at a certain level if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. And also, we call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to Keith Rupp. Keith, you rock.
Keep it up.
All right, so let's go into Fire Song and Sunspeaker, the deck tech. Of course, you guys said, Josh, you're going to play Boros, and I chose the one that did not have to do with attacking.
Yeah, this was the buy box preview.
Promo,
right? Yeah. Yep. Fire Song and Sunspeaker is 4 a red and a white for a 4/6 legendary creature, Minotaur Cleric. 6 CMC, Josh.
Oh, seems bad so far. 6 mana Boros Commander.
By the way, we all touted this as this could be the card that saves Boros, because it really was our only option.
Yeah, I think the deck is good. We'll talk about it.
Okay, so Fire Song and Sunspeaker says, red instant and sorcery spells you control have lifelink, and whenever a white instant or sorcery spell causes you to gain life, Fire Song and Sunspeaker deals 3 damage to target creature or player.
So your red spells gain you life, and your white life gain spells kind of deal damage, right?
Yeah.
It kind of synergizes in that way.
They are a Fire Song and a Sunspeaker. Fire, sun, red, white.
So, you know, what do you think? Do you think this is a powerful when you saw it?
No, I really didn't, because one, it's a 6 CMC commander. It's going to take a lot of time for you to even get it out there. And then after that, you have to play very specific spells you normally wouldn't in commander. It's very prone to removal in that way. And you're also directly making everyone very upset at you while you do these things, right?
Also, this doesn't address any of the issues we have with Boros, right? There's not really card advantage.
Yep.
There's not really ramp in there. It's not attacking either, which we usually tout attacking as like a not the best strategy being aggro. But at the same time, if you're going to take away the strengths of the color pair and be like, that's not actually even good in this deck, it seems like it would be bad. But it turns out that it does encourage you to build a spells-based deck, which I think is just a more powerful way to go than like aggro combat attacking.
Yeah, it gives you more flexibility. And as we'll learn, just having powerful spells, you don't need to necessarily have your commander out to make a difference in a lot of ways.
Yeah, a lot of the spells in the deck are still going to be good without Fire Song and Sunspeaker, but will be way better if they are out.
Yep.
So I did this deck a little different than normal. Usually we do sort of different categories building up to like, how do you win?
Yeah.
But to me, I started out with how does this deck win when I was building it.
One of probably two-ish ways.
There's two very specific ways that I thought the deck would try and win. And then, of course, within the deck, there are enough synergies that you can sort of put together a couple of other ways, but they're not as efficient. So the main way that I thought the deck would win is with an Earthquake-style effect. So there are, well, I'll just read Rolling Earthquake, but there are a couple cards that basically have this same text in the deck. Rolling Earthquake is red and X for a sorcery, and it deals X damage to each player and each creature without horsemanship. Regular Earthquake does this, except for instead of horsemanship, it's flying.
Flying, yeah.
And there's a couple other cards that are similar, but it's really the damage to each player. That's a good way to win, because, yes, it's dealing damage to you, but because your spell has lifelink,
thanks to Fire Song and Sunspeaker,
that damage to yourself is evened out.
Not even evened out. You gain some life a lot of times.
Well, you gain life off the other players and even out with you. So if you did this for, let's say, X equals 20, that would deal
20
to yourself, but that would even out. So you'd gain 60 life off that exchange.
Yeah.
And deal 20 to everybody, which is a lot. And so that was one of the ways that I envisioned the deck being able to sort of win or finish off the stragglers near the end of the game. Is like, boom, big explosion, I gain life so it doesn't kill me, you all die.
Yeah, and even if you don't kill them, you maim them to the point where they are within, you know, getting shot down by something, and you are now at 70, 80 life, in which case, the other most powerful card in this regard, it would be Aetherflux Reservoir.
Yeah, we did see this on Game Nights.
Yeah, and this is actually a very popular commander card. Obviously, black and white and Law of Life game decks will use this to great advantage in Storm decks as well. It's a 4-mana artifact. It says, whenever you cast a spell, you gain 1 life for each spell you cast this turn. And then the important text, the more important text, is pay 50 life. Aetherflux Reservoir deals 50 damage to target creature or player. This is almost never going towards a creature. I'll say that much.
Yeah, and you're not even too worried about that every time you cast a spell, you gain life thing. A lot of decks are. They're going to try and chain together 5-6 spells to gain the life to use this. You're like, no, I'm gaining a ton of life off of a single Earthquake at some point in the game or something like that. And then Aetherflux Reservoir just gives me a way to use all that life and finish off like a person or two people, maybe.
Death Star people, as people talk about it.
If you ever get to over 100 life and you have Aetherflux Reservoir, it's nearly impossible to lose the game.
Yeah, no one can do anything to you because you would just be able to point it directly at them and say a threat of activation.
They can't even go to remove the Aetherflux Reservoir most of the time, because if they do, in response, you laser them and anything they've got on the stack goes away with them. Only like Krosan Grips and certain like
split second cards.
Yeah, and maybe like disallows things that counter activated abilities can maybe get you out of that, but it's very difficult. There's not a lot of cards that will get them out of the situation once you have it on the table and a really healthy life total.
And then you're putting yourself at a pretty severe disadvantage if you have to disallow and get rid of this in the same turn. Lots here to consider.
So if Earthquake is going to be a really good way to win the game, you know, I was trying to build in a bunch of ways to make the Earthquake as impactful as possible.
And get some, in a way, some card-ish advantage.
Yeah, and so, you know, doubling or forking the spell I thought was a really good way. So if you can cast an Earthquake for 20, but then you can make a copy of it while it's on the stack, all of a sudden you're just killing everybody, and you're gaining enough life from the first one that even though the first one comes out and takes out Firesong and Sunspeaker, you survive the second copy. So there's a lot of fork type spells. Those are two of them.
Yeah, Reverberate and Reiterate. They both have the same text that say copy target instant or sorcery spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. Reiterate specifically has an extra buyback cost of 3 mana, so you can pay an additional 3, and this goes back to your hand. Very good card in the Mizzix deck specifically, but in this case, well, copying someone losing 15, 20 life, that is almost always going to be lethal.
Yeah. And we saw in Game Nights, we didn't say this at the beginning, if you haven't watched the new Game Nights yet, it's a couple weeks old at this point. Hopefully you have. We may be spoiling some things because we're talking about the deck that was played. So not a bad idea to stop the video right now, go watch it and come back if you don't want the ending ruined. So going back to Reverberate and Reiterate and fork type spells, these aren't just good to use on your own cards, they're also really good to use on your opponent's cards. Like again, we saw in Game Nights, people cast very powerful spells in EDH, and to be able to be like, I get that spell for 2 mana or 3 mana is really strong.
How does Red counterspell something? By copying it.
Yeah. Or they go to counter you. You can oftentimes copy their counter and point your copy at their counter and save your spell.
Or if they go to remove something, you can remove something as well. This is a way that red gets access to other parts of the color pie. It's not necessarily clean because you have to wait for someone else to do it, but also you're limited in options in general. So I'll take what I can get when it comes to that.
Yeah, I think these are underplayed cards in general. Two other cards that can kind of help you fork or copy your Earthquakes and things like that are Primal Amulet, which is a artifact that the important part is it flips over and becomes a land that can copy spells when you cast them, and Pyromancer's Goggles, which is a 5 mana artifact that taps for red, but if you use that mana on an instant or sorcery spell that's red, you copy the spell. So again, with Rolling Earthquake and those types of things, just double it up.
Super, and you're gonna need a lot of mana to do it too. And here's some classic cards that again usually are like, you know, it's like, oh, I can use this once to do something, but you kind of need that one time you use it to win the game. That's the hole that you're put in with this deck, is you're very all in on a lot of your plays, which is very much my play style, but not yours, I don't think. So you kind of need to make sure that when you do go off that turn, you have the ability to hold up all the mana you need to. So a card like Mana Geyser, 3 red, it's a sorcery, you add red to your mana pool for each tapped land your opponent's control. If you can cast this, usually people won't counter this part of it. They'll see what you're going to do with the mana and then counter that. So you get all the mana, then you're holding up a Reiterate or a Reverberate. You have a billion mana, so you can buy it back as well. And you can also use cards like Treasonous Ogre, one of my favorite cards. 3 red for a 2/3 Ogre Shaman. It's got Dethrone, but more importantly, it's an activated ability to pay 3 life and add red to your mana pool. So at instant speed, you're already gaining all that life, right? So now you can convert your life into Aetherflux Reservoir stuff, or you can use it for something like Firesong and Sunspeaker. By having all that life and then just spend it all, get a bunch of mana, just keep going off.
Turning your life into mana, very powerful in a deck that like has a lot of life gain.
Yeah.
And I like Mana Geyser is a card that you don't often want to play until your opponents are tapped out anyway. So often it's just like,
they won't even have the ability to counter something.
It's a lot of times it's just like, I get 25 mana in my mana pool. That is very often, if you're going to do that, you're going to win the game in a deck like this.
Yeah.
Neheb the Eternal is another one that just, this is a favorite of yours, Jimmy.
Yeah, actually, all three of these cards are played in my mono red Neheb deck. Because it's all about
giving you a bunch of mana.
Big mana real fast, and then how can
fireball.
You use it?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a way to get enough mana to sort of get off a big fireball, or I'm going to call it that, but a big earthquake or something like that. There's also some cheeky stuff you can do. There's Stuffy Doll and Boros Reckoner in the deck, which are creatures that when they take damage, they'll deal damage to your opponents. Mm-hmm. And so you combine those with some of the board wipes like the earthquakes. But also there's Blasphemous Act, there's Chain Reaction in the deck, and these are cards that are going to deal damage to all creatures. You'll gain a bunch of life because of Firesong and Sunspeaker. And if you have Stuffy Doll or Boros Reckoner out, that damage will be converted into damage against your opponent. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to sort of end the game. Firesong and Sunspeaker gives these things lifelink. Think of how powerful that is if there are like 7 creatures out.
Right.
If you Blasphemous Act with 7 creatures out, it deals 13 damage to all 7 creatures. Yeah, so you gain 91 life right there.
Wow.
And that's like two mana. Yeah, it kills Firesong and Sunspeaker, but a lot of times now I'm at 91 life, play Treasonous Ogre, use 60 of it to make, 20 mana and go crazy.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff this deck can do.
Right. And it does require a bit of setup because you are going all in a lot of these cases, but you want to get there, right? Once you have the combo built up, it can sometimes be really hard to interact with you because you can just reverberate, and you can buy it back because now you have a Treasonous Ogre or you have just tons of mana to use. And you can sort of lock down the game that way.
Yep. So one of the cards I added was that I didn't have in the original list on Game Nights was Hour of Devastation.
Ah.
What I realized is Hour of Devastation is 3 red for a sorcery that deals 5 damage to all creatures and planeswalkers. 5 damage is the perfect number because Fire Song and Sunspeaker has 6 toughness.
4-6.
I don't know why I didn't have that in the list originally. So if you only looked at the Game Nights list, you should look at it again.
Yeah.
I've made a few upgrades and that's one of them.
Well, in that game, there were not too many creatures on the battlefield, so...
Yeah, that's true.
It wouldn't have been too effective, but yeah, right. It's a great addition. I think actually one thing I should note is that
it would have killed that stupid angel though.
Yeah, that 4/4 that kept smacking you. One thing about that Game Nights episode that I don't think a lot of people realize is how low the creature count was in total.
Yeah.
So actually a deck like yours a lot of times was at a bit of a distinct disadvantage because your cards like Earthquake weren't also board wipes and Blasphemous Act wasn't an easy card to cast.
I mean, if you're facing a token deck and you have an Earthquake in your hand, even just doing it for 3 can sometimes gain you like an insane amount of life because if they have 30 creatures, that can be like 90. I've been at like, you know, in the hundreds of life totals in this deck.
You know, I think that actually answers the question about how Boros can get card draw. Just live long enough to get more turns.
Like, I have so much life that I'm going to live long enough to draw more cards.
I mean, it does give you a bit of a lease on life to be like, at least I can continue to top deck for a little bit. So it's not card draw. It's just, you know, more being alive for a little bit longer.
And I think that kind of goes into the next section, which is the rest of the deck. Honestly, once you get past like the main game plan, which we just laid out, is kind of like ramp, card draw, removal spell, and board wipes. And it's kind of just, the plan is like, don't let anybody go too nuts until I can assemble the situation I want, which is I mana geyser into an Earthquake, or I reiterate an Earthquake, or I Aetherflux Reservoir after I've Blasphemous Acted and gotten a million life.
Right.
And that's kind of the game plan. And so having a lot of life plays into a control strategy. Because, like you said, time is important because you just want enough time to get the pieces together.
And you sure as heck aren't drawing that many cards in Boros either.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's Austere Command. Cleansing Meditation, I think, is a card we haven't talked about maybe enough on this show.
Great card.
Yeah.
It's a card with Threshold that says destroy all enchantments. But if you have Threshold, which is if 7 or more cards are in your graveyard, you destroy all enchantments and then you return to play all of the cards in your graveyard destroyed this way.
So it basically like destroys everyone else's enchantments, but not yours. And the deck doesn't have a ton of enchantments, so even if you just need to fire that off, a lot of times you're going to be fine.
Well, red is not great at dealing with that, right?
Right.
And white is sort of where they have to go for that. So that's why Austere Command is just, again, one of the best board wipes in the game, bar none.
There are some efficient removal spells. Lightning Helix is a really good one. It's a red and a white for an instant. It deals 3 damage to a target creature or player, and you gain 3 life.
But
it really deals 6 and you gain 6 because Lightning Helix deals 3, has lifelink, so you gain those 3. Then you gain 3 life, and Fire Song and Sunspeaker says if a white instant or sorcery would gain you life, you deal 3 damage to something. So then it deals 3 more. So
yeah.
2 mana, deal 6, gain 6. Super efficient and just worth it in the deck. I didn't actually put like Lightning Bolt in here. I still didn't think it was quite efficient enough.
No, I think Lightning Helix is the right call.
Because
it's both colors and affects both sides of Fire Song and Sunspeaker. And Lightning Helix, sure, someone like Ben Bateman might play it in their commander deck because they love playing modern.
And he will probably get me with it.
Yeah, oh, 100%. But you do have the additional value. I don't think just gaining life off a Lightning Bolt is enough.
Right. You don't get the extra damage again like the Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then here's a card we just keep talking about more and more.
Electrodominance, cardkingdom.com/command zone. Pick up a copy. X red, red instant. It deals X damage to any target, and you can cast a card with CMC cost X or less from your hand without paying its mana cost. It's a great way to give cards flash at instant speed because this is an instant. This can just get people as well. There's tons of different options and times when you'll cast this, maybe you'll put out a blocker, or you'll cast this and then you'll be able to throw out a Sunforger end of turn before someone can really deal with it. There's a lot of things Electrodominance
does.
It's
a good
way
to sneak the Aetherflux into play at the end of turn so that they're not ready for it.
Right.
Okay, before we continue, let's take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. All right, and we're back. So the next card we want to talk about for this Fire Song and Sunspeaker deck is...
the literal best card?
Yeah, what Jimmy correctly identifies... during that Game Nights episode as the best card in the deck.
By a long shot, by the way.
And I think most Boros decks, if they have this card in it, it will be the best card in the deck. It's Sunforger, which if you watch the episode, you see, like, I get to the point where that's my entire game plan.
Well, you look at your hand, you have two cards
most of the game, and I'm like, Sunforger, equipping and unequipping is my only ability to stay in the game, and it's actually decent. I was in the game just with that game plan. So let me read Sunforger. It's 3 mana for a artifact equipment. Equip creature gets +4/+0. Doesn't generally matter, but it can, because you make an 8/6 Fire Song and Sunspeaker that's hitting people. It's not like that doesn't matter at all. But the big text is, oh, sorry, it equips for 3 mana. But the big text is you pay a red and a white, and you unattach Sunforger. And then you search your library for a red or white instant card with converted mana cost 4 or less, and you cast that card without paying its mana cost.
So basically a 5 mana tutor, 3 to equip, red and a white on top of that. Find any red or white instant sorcery card.
Not sorcery, just instant.
Instant. With CMC 4 or less. I think actually the 4 or less number is pretty important too. You can get some bigger stuff with it.
Yeah, if you do 4 CMC, you really only overpaid by 1, and you... Mm-hmm. It's card draw because it was in your library and now you're playing the card. And
it's card selection, card draw, it's tutoring.
It's tutoring, yeah. Yeah. Because you're getting specific cards and specific answers. And so most decks that have Sunforger will have a Sunforger package. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of two ways that Sunforger package can be meant. The first is a couple of different ways to find the Sunforger. So Enlightened Tutor, Steel Shaper's Gift. I talk a lot about Steel Shaper's Gift as a card I'll put in, even though I only have like a Skull Clamp and a Sword of Feast and Famine in the deck, because Skull Clamp is so good that like I just want another copy of it.
Yeah,
Sunforger
exactly.
plays that role in this deck, so Steel Shaper's Gift. Also, there's a Sword of Fire Knights that I recently put in there as additional card draw.
And yeah, that's good.
Normally I would put Feast and Famine, right?
Right. Well, Feast and Famine or maybe the Life Gain one.
Yeah, but in this deck I actually put Fire and Ice because of the card draw on the sword, and I wanted it. But Sunforger is the card you go get first. It's just that you draw Steel Shaper's Gift when you already have Sunforger, you can still use it for the other equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So back to Sunforger package, that also means the cards in the deck that are there because you know you could go get them with Sunforger. And this is a really toolboxy thing, and that's why when it's out, it's so powerful, because anything that happens, at least the first couple of times until you start running out of gas for the Sunforger, you have a way to deal with it. It's funny, red white has a few outside the color by things that like really give you a lot of play.
Yeah, and the downsides, right? You can only unequip it once. It's on someone else's turn, so you have to wait for it to come back. But at the same time, we talk about this at Boros, you are so limited in your options that this, even though it's good, it's very powerful, and I think this in any other color combination would be absurd.
Right.
In Boros, it just happens to be the best card because nothing else comes close to doing this, even though it does have its limitations. So that just gives you another idea of like, Josh didn't break Boros, all right? He made a great show of it, but I think we only reference it once, but you really just had no cards in your hand the entire game.
Yeah. So some of the cards in the Sunforger package that you can go get, we saw played on Game Nights, Lapse of Certainty is a white counter spell. We recently had a big discussion on the Discord about whether it's a real counter spell. I think people...
It's a tempo spell.
I really do think it's a real counter spell. I think people overestimate the downside of... Well, let's go ahead and read the card.
2 and a white for an instant. Counter target spell. It's a white card. If that spell is countered this way, put it on top of its owner's library instead of into that player's graveyard. So it does time walk them a little bit too, because they have to redraw the spell and they're not going to draw a new card the next turn.
Yeah, I think people think like, oh... A lot of people said, well, it really only delays them or whatever. And technically, it reads that way. But I've never played Lapse of Certainty where I thought it mattered that it went on top of their library. Mm-hmm. I was never like, oh, man, they're going to draw it next turn, and what am I going to do? Most of the time, you're protecting something important that's going to happen next turn,
right,
or you're stopping somebody from winning right then. And a lot of times, it's like, I stop you from winning. Now everybody knows you're about to win, and now we can concentrate on you, and your window is gone.
Yeah.
And that happens, I think, a lot in Commander, which is like... In 1v1, you only have yourself to rely on, so delaying somebody is not that great because, like, well, what are you going to do when they now draw it and play it?
Yeah.
But in a multiplayer game, I have 2 other people. What I'm going to do is is basically what I've done, which is I warn Jimmy and Mel that Craig's about to do this thing, and they can now help me.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and, you know, in the case of our game nights, it was a little different where you did this to protect your own stuff, which I thought was by far the most bizarre sequence of plays maybe ever.
The counterspell war between
Boros and Orzhov. Just, it happens. It's on game nights.
Teferi's Protection, a card we talk about all the time, which can protect you from basically anything. There's also 2 cards I think that are really good in the deck. And unfortunately, specifically what Rachel did at the end of Game Nights didn't allow these to come into play. But there's Comeuppance and Deflecting Palm. I'll read Deflecting Palm. It's red and a white for an instant. The next time a source of your choice would deal damage to you this turn, prevent that damage. If damage is prevented this way, Deflecting Palm deals that much damage to that source's controller. So what can happen here is that they attack you with like a big creature, you deflecting Pommet, and they take the damage they were going to take from the big creature, or like, let's say they fireball you or some big source of damage. I've won games with this, playing this
you
deck.
You can definitely steal a lot of games with this kind of card. Not to mention it triggers both sides of Fire Song and Sunspeaker as well.
The problem with why I couldn't use that at the end of the game on game nights is because damage is not the same as loss of life, and both Exsanguinate and Debt to the Deathless are loss of life and not damage.
Each player each opponent loses X life, so it's not damage. There are a lot of comments about that, but yeah, just read the card and you'll see. Again, red and white, if it was loss of life, I think that's actually outside the color pie. So they wanted it to deal specifically with damage being dealt to you by a source, combat, a spell, whatever it is.
Those cards steal games, so there are times when Sunforger is equipped and it wins you the game because you're like, oh, Deflecting Palm, you're dead now instead of me.
It makes it really hard to play against this kind of deck too, because it might be like, well, we just need to get them down to a certain life total. We have to all just swing at him, and at a certain point someone's gonna get got by a card like that.
Also, Sunforger can get Reiterate, can get Reverberate, can copy, so it's like they go to cast some crazy instant or sorcery that isn't even pointed at you, and you're like, oh, Time Stretch, I'll take two extra turns too,
yeah,
you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oof, I mean, yeah, well, they'll get their two extra turns first,
but
so
you still
have
get
to
some extra turns. Card draw, extra turns. We did it.
We did it.
Red with their crappy copies of the other versions of cards.
Okay, so before we go here, because that's basically the deck. It's not super complicated. You know, like I said, trying to build up to a big Earthquake, Rolling Earthquake, Aetherflux Reservoir, take advantage of something like that. Maybe some get a little crazy with a Stuffy Doll, a Boros Reckoner, and, you know, a Blasphemous Act and that kind of stuff. That can happen.
Those are fun combos, but anytime someone tells me a combo with three or more cards, I go, cool, it Magic Dream Time Christmas Land.
That's not your main plan. You may have to resort to it if you get lucky later, but most of the time you're just trying to control what's out there, remove key things, and put together a really big Earthquake or something like that. But I did want to talk about two cards specifically that are sort of newish, and I think are, for me at least, becoming staples-ish in these colors. One for sure, and one-ish. So the one that sort of I want to talk about first is Stolen Strategy. And it's four and a red for an enchantment. And it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of each opponent's library. Until end of turn, you may cast non-land cards from among those exiled cards, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast those spells. So you kind of Itali other people's decks. I mean, you have to pay the mana to cast the cards.
But it doesn't require you to tap and attack.
That's right. And, you know, you can spend mana as though it's mana of any colors. Mm-hmm. You can't play lands this way. It doesn't say play the card. You have to cast it. However, in some ways, it kind of draws you, I was going to say three cards a turn. It draws you like
one and a half,
1.7 cards a turn.
Yeah, somewhere around there,
close to two cards a turn. Pretty good. And the thing that I've found with this card is very often you're taking things from the deck that your deck can't have. So card draw, you like, if you find a Rhystic Study off this, or if you find a
slam dunk that card.
Yeah, Rampant Growths and stuff like that, that your color can't do, and that's the kind of stuff you can find from other people's decks. I've really been very happy with Stolen Strategy, and decks that have red but not blue and not black, I'm very likely to run this card. Maybe even some decks that have those two colors too, because it is fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It adds an element of chaos, which I always love. And again, like, sometimes your opponents just have extremely powerful cards.
I mean,
getting access to them is pretty good.
Yeah, if you're playing against people that are good, which you generally probably are, then they're gonna have good cards in their deck. And
even if their deck just has some crazy jank stuff in it, there's always the corner case scenarios, and this happens again, three players, three different decks, three all different colors around you. You're gonna find something, and it's gonna make an impact on the game. I play this in Limited into a Giant, and it's very good.
Oh yeah,
it's just absurd.
This is from Battle Bond,
yeah.
Yeah, so I would encourage people to go out there and pick up some copies of Stolen Strategy. I think it's a really good card.
All right, let's talk about the second best card in the deck.
This card, we called it when the set came out, Ravnica Allegiance, and I've seen it in play many times now, and it is one of the best white cards, period, in the format.
Period. It's not Path to Exile.
Nope. Although that's one of the best white cards.
Plowshares.
It's not Enlightened Tutor. It's not Teferi's Protection.
Not Teferi's Protections, but it's on that list. It's Smothering Tithe. All right, that's the end of the show, everybody. It's three in the white for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent draws a card, that player may play two. If the player doesn't, you create a colorless treasure artifact token with tap, sacrifice this artifact, add one mana of any color. Womp.
Two is really hard to pay.
Yeah. And you saw it in the episode. We paid for it maybe three, four,
I think twice. I think it was you both times.
You know it was me. Of course it was me both times. Who else would it be? I'm not trying to exsanguinate for all my mana.
This card is insane. Every time it hits the table, it's just like, uh-oh, and it creates so much advantage.
It's for not a do-nothing card either, right? It either taxes your opponent's mana, or it's by the time it gets back to you, it's going to give you a lot more mana.
A lot of times you can count on getting the treasures to the point where you can say, I'm going to play it, I know I'm going to get two treasures, and then I'm going to use those two treasures before it even gets back to me, so it actually didn't do nothing.
Right.
It allowed me to cast, like, another spell.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is so good in our feather.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're always using that mana.
So good.
Oh my gosh. And you're drawing cards. Okay.
We were having this discussion on our Discord the other day. I'm curious for you to weigh in.
Okay.
If gun to your head, you could only have...
Oh, I saw this.
You could only have one of the following cards in your deck.
Which would you have?
Teferi's Protection, Smothering Tithe. Those are your choices. You can't have both. You can only have one. What do you put in?
Smothering Tithe.
I think so, too.
Yeah, Teferi's Protection, it's a one-time use. It exiles itself when it gets to your graveyard. You never get to get it back. Smothering Tithe, in general, the way to win Magic games is by playing cards and using mana. Smothering Tithe is going to get you more consistently. I think if you put it on like a win percentage thing, like times that you win because Smothering Tithe was able to ramp you out, open you up to more spells, get you...
Teferi's
Protection just does one thing. It just protects you.
I mean, it's very good and it can win you games, right?
Right.
Teferi's Protection, I mean, listen, I think it's fairly close. But it's very obvious when Teferi's Protection wins you that game.
Right.
Because you're like, something's about to happen. I Teferi's Protection. I live through it. I kill you. Or I cast Armageddon. And with that on the stack, I Teferi, whatever. Don't do that to your friends, by the way. but Smothering Tithe is way more subtle because it wins you the game way turns earlier than you actually win, right?
Right.
Like you win on turn 11, but Smothering Tithe actually won you the game on turns 6, 7, and 8 by giving you 9 extra mana over those turns.
Yeah, and that mana will help you contribute to all the other parts of your deck that are important. It may help you get that card draw spell out. It may help you tutor and play another card that turn. It just gives you more options.
You just had enough extra mana to remove that key threat and do something.
Yeah.
Also, and I think what was underestimated about this card the most is how many extra cards people draw in Commander.
Yeah, that's a good point. It happens all the time. We tell it all the time. Card draw is a very important part. Especially when you play a card like Wheel of Fortune alongside it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a whole different
that's
thing.
That's a whole other thing. That was lucky, by the way.
But. Yeah, it's definitely one of the 1-2 punches that this deck needs to do to really set itself ahead. Imagine if you didn't draw anything off that. That 7 cards didn't have your Aetherflux Reservoir.
I could have easily just not drawn the wheel, too.
Yeah.
And I think Smothering Tide is still great in that game, but I'm just not rocketed into the lead.
Yeah, I think what people don't realize is, you know, it's like, yeah, Boros did a great job in these cards. You need, if you want to play Boros, that's a way to do it. But you drew probably what? At that point in the game, you probably drawn 17 or 18 cards. You got 3 of the cards that you definitely needed. And it's not unlikely, but it's on the unlikelier side, I think.
Yeah. But going back to Smothering Tithe here, I think that like Consecrated Sphinx, Rhystic Study, people are drawing cards in Commander. They are not like going through their turns and just like drawing my one for turn. That's just not what decks do. People are playing, you know, Phyrexian Arenas, and they're playing all kinds of stuff that drawing cards. So Smothering Tithe is not just give you 3 treasures every turn. I bet you it averages closer to 5 over the course of a game if you get it
out. If no one pays for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they're not, because if you're drawing 2 cards, you have to take your entire turn to pay for that. They're just not paying for it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I was playing that game, I was just crossing my fingers and going, I really hope Josh doesn't draw another creature, because all he's doing is drawing 1 card a turn, but he's making a million mana. So you're just afraid of what that person can do with that mana. Smothering Tithe is very good. You have to pair it up with some sort of card draw in some way.
It's just like any other ramp spell, right?
Yeah.
You can run into the problem of, I have tons of mana, but nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that card's really, really good. So wanted to talk about it a little bit.
Right.
Here's some cards that I was considering for the deck, and for a couple of reasons didn't put in, and I just wanted to talk about. So I think Pyroblast or Red Elemental Blast are both really good includes. These are 1 red mana to destroy a blue permanent or counter a blue spell. These are really good cards. I think most red decks that don't have blue want to run these. You run into a lot of blue in Commander. The reason I didn't is because we knew the meta for that game.
Everyone did. Everyone built around the fact that we're playing, and, you know, these are the guilds.
We knew what guilds everybody else was going to be. And since only one deck was going to have blue, it didn't seem worth it to put that in. Now, we didn't know the specific cards in everybody's deck, but you knew, like, blue deck. So
you may have put in a blue Elemental Blast if you knew that Kenji, you know, he's playing blue. So if you think Cyclonic Rift is really going to blow you out that hard, then you might. That would be the corner case, I think.
But like, I think in your average Boros deck, put it in there because most games there's going to be a couple of decks with blue in them. And if there's 2 decks at the table with blue in them, and often you're against 3, let's be honest, then that's 1 mana, any of their spells, like it becomes a really good card.
I mean, not to mention, though, you do have Reiterate and Reverberate in this deck, so
that's
you do have some protection against it. But yeah, I think if your meta tends to run more heavily towards blue, it's always nice to have 2 options. You know, it's like I have a Reiterate and an Elemental Blast. someone plays a blue spell, you're going to want to counter it with a specific card that can do it, because you don't want to save your Reverberate for something more important later on.
Dictate of the Twin Gods is 3 red for an enchantment with flash, and it basically doubles damage. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a card that I would think about adding, because it's another way to sort of quote-unquote fork your Earthquake.
Yeah.
Flash it on the end step before your turn, now cast the Earthquake. Now my 20 damage does 40, kills everybody instead of just being mildly annoying.
Furnace of Wrath, I think, also does
Furnace of Wrath
thing.
Is another one.
Yep. More wheels. More ways to just draw cards, really.
I really only had the one, but I think Reforged the Soul is probably a good one I would think about. I don't like the ones that count the number of cards in your hand, then shuffle and draw that many, because you don't get card advantage off that.
Yeah, you're actually losing a card, and then you count the cards in your hand. And if you don't have a lot of cards to begin with, like Josh didn't have for the entirety of the game, then it's hard to refill your hand in that way.
Yeah, and I think people don't maybe understand why Wheel of Fortune is so good and an expensive card and was, you know, it was restricted back in the day. It's because it draws you 7 no matter what. So if you can play all your cards, go down to 1 or 2 cards, cast it, it just drew you 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very, very good. So, and then I put Not Mana Tithe.
This is a very popular comment in our last game nights of, oh, if Josh, if only you had Mana Tithe to stop Rachel from doing all that stuff.
So Mana Tithe is 1 white mana for a 4 spike in white. It says, you know, counter target spell unless the opponent pays 1 more mana. Here's the thing, and a lot of people were like, if you had it, you could have Sunforged for it and countered the Debt to the Deathless. Here's why I don't like Mana Tithe in general, is because 1 mana, so often your opponent will just have that on accident to pay for the spell. It's not all the time that they just tap out for an X spell.
Also, if they know you have it, they're never going to not play around it.
Yeah, it's easy to play around, but also they just play around it on accident. So I don't like a counterspell that's just not reliable.
Yeah.
It's not, I'd much rather have Lapse of Certainty. I know what it's going to do every time. It's going to stop it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah, it goes to the top of their library, but at least Mana Tithe is just a type of card that you have in your hand and you're like, I really would like to counter that, but they just have the mana.
Yeah, and that's the worst. Like a mana drain or something's like, I really just hope they just, it's like you'd rather have like a Syncopate or something in your hand where you can at least make sure that that what you're going to do is counter their spell.
Yeah, so Mana Tithe, yes, I know a lot of you thought I should have that in the deck. I do not actually believe it's a very good card most of the time. Yes, will you get people out of nowhere sometimes?
Sure.
Yes, but I think that's more than balanced out. In fact, overbalanced out by the times when you just it's just dead in your hand.
Yeah, and there's plenty of other cards, again, that do a similar thing to a counterspell that you can use if you need to do it their way, or you know, you just have other options to be more flexible than Mana Tithe is.
Yeah, so the last note here is Boros Problems. And listen, the deck is quite good. It's high variance, though. I've played it a number of times, both before and after game nights, and it can definitely win games, but it can definitely have those games where it just doesn't put the pieces together.
Real unfun games, by the way.
And a lot of games, I just find myself at a point where I don't have a lot of cards in my hand. I don't feel like I have very many options. It's not the situation I'm used to being in, so I'm very cognizant when it's happening to me that it's like, ugh. I just feel like I have 3 cards and I just have no way to refill my hand. And so I really can only do 1 thing or 2 things. Like I don't have choices.
What do you feel about cards like Howling Mine?
Yeah, I have Howling Mine in the deck.
There you go.
So just because, listen, if you're in blue and you got Rhystic Study out, giving you 1 more card turn is not as big a deal as me getting 1 more card turn.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not that much of a downside.
This deck is definitely dependent on the fact that you got to draw the right stuff at the right time, but also have a way to last.
Yeah.
You know, because again, like we saw what happened. If Josh had just drawn a little bit differently, it was only because of Sunforger you were able to always have a relevant answer.
And Smothering Tithe.
And Smothering Tithe,
combined, like, gave me the mana to just recast the commander over and over. Because thinking you don't have Smothering Tithe in that game, I'm just totally out of it because I can't even recast the commander. It was costing 12 mana by the end.
Yeah, exactly.
So, again, the deck is very good. There have definitely been points where I'm at 287 life or whatever. Like, It is cool.
And Lifelinker can take you to that total.
Yeah.
So download Lifelinker on the app stores if you guys want the Lifelinker app that we use when we are playing the game.
All right.
To the listeners.
Do you have a favorite Boros deck?
Yeah, it's probably this one.
Do you think the color pair, red-white, is as weak as we say? Or are you one of those people that disagrees and thinks that it's just fine? We do hear from people that say, I don't think Boros needs any help at all. I think it's totally fine. Which seems nuts to me, but
as
maybe
a man
with
that loves red, I can disagree with you confidently there.
Maybe with Feather and a few more like that, we'll eventually get there. But
the problem is
a few more Smothering Tides.
Yeah, and I think the way they're doing it doesn't really break the, because it's like one creature that you need to base everything around to make.
At least
it
it's legendary. So
at least
can.
It's legendary. Yeah.
I think we need more cards on the level of Smothering Tithe. Maybe a couple more like that. That card is so good; it single-handedly makes white a few percentage points better than it was. Like, that's crazy for one card to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's still not enough to sort of push the color pair into the realm of the other color pairs.
Yeah.
Okay, well, since we've talked up Sunforger, Smothering Tithe, Stolen Strategy, Fire Song and Sunspeaker, Feather, you can probably pre-order right now, War of the Spark. If you want any of that stuff, go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. When you use that affiliate link, you really are supporting all of our shows, all of our content, game nights, everything else. You're getting the cards you want, and you're just getting all that stuff thrown in as gravy. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, Fire Song and Sunspeaker was a buy box promo. So if you buy a box of War of the Spark, you're going to get the Tezzeret. That's a promo on that.
Oh, yeah, that card actually looks sweet.
Yeah, static ability, giving some stuff affinity. Pretty nuts. Also, while you're over at Card Kingdom or at your local game store, Ultra Pro sponsors this show. You can find some Ultra Pro product. Like, again, Josh was really able to rep Boros with these sweet Boros sleeves. Ultra Pro always has product that's relevant to the set that's coming out, and they always do stuff that's, you know, throwing back to old sets as well. We've seen them print awesome playmats for all the GPs, so supporting Ultra Pro also supports this show.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. Okay, now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something outside the world of Magic.
Josh is turning his entire body to me right now.
I have something.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I thought that was the, Jimmy, time to fill
no,
the space.
No, actually, it's my turn, because you've saved me the last couple of times.
Nice, so okay, all right, I'm down.
It's a show on Netflix. It's called The OA. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay, so I think it got suggested because we like Stranger Things a lot.
Okay.
And it's kind of this weird supernatural thriller thing. It's hard to explain. It's a mystery type show. I'd put it in the category of Stranger Things or like Lost. Those things where you're like learning about characters, but there's something weird in the past and you're putting pieces together and trying to figure out
Alias,
what's going on.
But J.
there's
Abrams-esque shows.
Yeah, there's some supernatural stuff. Although, unlike the J.J. Abrams show. I don't want to throw shade at J.J., but...
No, we can all toss some shade at J.J. He knows.
Unlike
he knows.
Some of those shows, Damon Lindelof...
here questions we are, get answered?
Yeah. Yes.
That's they, all you need to say.
They have a... It's clear that they have a an answer to some of their questions.
Okay, great.
It's not like they're... Like, just throwing out questions and they're like, we don't know. We have no idea.
Well, a lot of the times it's like, the thrill of the question is better than the answer itself. It's like, no. I want to know the answers.
Yeah, I want to know that you have the answer so I can trust you. And so The OA on Netflix is a pretty cool show we've been enjoying, me and my girlfriend. So.
How many episodes total?
There's two seasons, and I'm not sure how many episodes per season. We're in, like, first season, like, episode 7.
What's
we're
general, what's it about?
Okay, so...
Quick breakdown?
Okay, it starts and there's this girl and she jumps off a bridge in New York. She survives. Her parents come to the hospital and she doesn't recognize them because she was blind, but now she can see.
Whoa.
So she's never actually seen her parents. Yeah, she's never actually seen her parents. But then once she puts her hand on their face, she recognizes them and stuff. But then we start finding out, you know, she's been missing for a few years at that point too.
Do other people start unlocking things as well?
Yeah,
okay.
And she does too.
Cool.
So it's pretty
cool. I like that. I like that a lot. All right.
Something else that you out there might like is our sister podcast.
Might? You will love it.
The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler, who was just on the show last week, and Ben Bateman. They talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. You know, War of the Spark, Modern Horizons. There's a whole bunch of crazy stuff coming into Modern right now. There's the Mythic Championship in London which is also Modern. They're trying out the London Mulligan. Modern is going through a lot of changes right now. And if you want to keep on top of everything that's happening, Alex has been... They're going to get you caught up to speed faster than anybody. So you can find them on Twitter at the MMCast, right next to us at collective.company, or if you type Masters of Modern into your search bar on YouTube, that is where you're going to find them because they're doing video content now too.
The editors for this show are probably a combination of Ashlyn Rose.
Rose. Oh, that's good. Ashlyn
Rose. It's like those like Sifby Rose.
And
Josh Murphy.
Murph. This is not as cool as Ashlyn's.
Yeah. Ashlyn's has the angelic quality to it. Although she's more of a Kozilek kind of person. So.
That's true. She's far from an angel.
Yeah. Well, maybe the Eldrazi see them. Well, actually, I don't think they're cognizant of really what they're doing. But perhaps other people did see them as angels.
Those people, the false gods, man.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for doing the living card animations that you see behind us on set, as well as the intros and outros of the show. We are in the Steam Vents today.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We were talking about Boros, but we just didn't have a Boros background.
Nah, this is just our real true calling. Red and blue. Actually, it kind of lines up really well. Because the blue side's over there.
And the red side's over there.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfection. All totally planned.
Planned, as always.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.